Hey guys, it's Drexel. Welcome to Black Hollywood Lies Political Culture. We're talking the Indiana primary, some Donald Trump things, some gun things, and the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Catch you in a bit.
You are now tuned in to Black Hollywood Lies, Black Tea Party.
Hey guys, it's Drexel here in the house with our brand new logos behind us. Welcome to Political Culture here on Black Hollywood Live. You can follow me on Twitter at Drexel Hurd. I'm here with all of my wonderful co-hosts today.
I'm Elena. You can find me at Hey It's Lay.
I'm Julian. You can find me at Julian Dujarric.
I'm B. You can find me at B. Sorrells.
So we actually started the show with the Cup song from Pitch Perfect because that is what, very appropriate. We are definitely going to miss President Obama after this primary and after this general election. But we're going to get to that a little bit later on today. Let's talk about this Indiana primary that just happened right now. At the top of the primary, they're basically called the Republican race for Donald Trump, right at the top. So he will be the projected winner out of Indiana. And at this point, he's probably going to be the presumptive Republican Party nominee.
President Trump.
Nominee Trump.
Yes, nominee, please.
Let's just say nominee Trump for right now. Ted Cruz has suspended his campaign. We were going to talk about him, but I guess we don't have to talk about him anymore.
Right, but which is so weird because he just decided that he was going to join. They were going to join up and go against Trump for this primary. So it's just like, what happened?
He's hanging.
We talked a little bit last week just about how we kind of feel about the Republican race as it is. Now that you guys know that Donald Trump is the likely nominee, how are you guys feeling about Republicans' chances? Sorry, we're not laughing. I'm not laughing from all my Republican friends. I really, truly... I feel some type of way for you. How are you guys feeling about this Republican race now that you know where they're headed?
I'm going to be honest. I did not think Trump was going to make it this far. So I'm actually pretty shocked that he has basically become the nominee. I'm just at loss for words about it, to be honest. So
I'm not. I knew.
Really?
No, I knew this man was going to be the nominee a while ago. If you've seen some of the stuff that I used to say on the previous political show on Black Hollywood Live, I called it. I knew it. I mean, there's a sentiment in the air of sort of this frustration with like what the ongoing of, you know, politics as usual. And so, you know, he's tapped into that and he's doing a really good job at riling up his supporters. So.
But that's what's scary.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I mean, it might not be surprising, but it's scary that there is actually genuine support. Mm-hmm. Like, state after state, there's genuine support. And it's like, what are you... I really just need to sit down and have a conversation. Like, what are you, you know, seeing in him that I'm not?
You know, it almost reminds me a little bit, goes back to your point, you said rile up people. It almost reminds me of the Southern governors who were all about segregation back during the Civil Rights Movement, who were riling up a bunch of people, spewing a bunch of nonsense, and now you've got this guy essentially doing the same thing. And, you know, I liked him on Celebrity Apprentice.
I'll just say
I mean, that's about it. But now he's about to take away all of Indiana's 57 delegates, which will definitely put him on the path to nomination. In fact, he'll probably, you know, like I said, the magic number last time is 1237. He'll probably reach about 1400 by the time this whole thing is over. And, but we'll see what happens. What do you guys think is going to happen with the Cruz delegates and the Rubio delegates? John Kasich hasn't dropped out, by the way. I totally forgot about John Kasich. He's, you know, his campaign put out a statement today saying, "Oh, we're not going to drop out. We're, you know, we're in it to win it." He didn't put it in so many words, but I'll be interested to see if the Cruz delegates and the Rubio delegates swing over to Kasich.
Yeah.
At least in this Stop Trump movement, which has kind of died. What do you guys think?
I mean, honestly, it could go either way. I don't want them to go for Trump, and I could see why they're all trying to rally up and go against him. So I really would say I'm hoping that they would go with the other nominee and not with Trump.
I mean, regardless of how I may feel about any of the candidates on the left or the right, I think it's probably a pretty safe assumption that several of those delegates would probably go to John Kasich. I mean, the Stop Trump movement, I don't think is dying. I think if anything is, there's been fuel added to that fire. So that's my opinion.
Do you think so? Reince Priebus, who's the chairman of the Republican Party, mm-hmm. came out right after this whole Indiana primary basically ended, and told his party basically to kind of coalesce around Donald Trump at this point. Mm-hmm. Now the GOP kind of has a Never Clinton hashtag that they are working on. So do you think the party's going to listen to Reince Priebus? Because they really haven't been pretty much through this whole time. You know, once they get to the convention, they have an opportunity to say, no, party, we're not going to go with this presumptive nominee. We've still got some time to possibly kind of change some delegates around.
I mean, it would be nice if they continue to support the Stop Trump movement. It would be nice if they...
But they never supported it to begin with.
Yeah, right. So if they make a swing, now that Cruz has dropped out, if they mm-hmm. make that swing, that would be nice. Only because then it would be like this head-to-head race between the two of them. Right now, Trump is sweeping out the states when it comes to delegates.
Right.
Like, he's just dominating the race. So it would be nice to see another Republican Party, like, be supported. I mean, but it's 2016 and nothing has been normal this year.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see.
Well, the Stop Trump movement had an opportunity back last year or earlier this year when Paul Ryan was kind of in, the Speaker of the House was kind of in this, oh, is he going to run or is he not going to run? Mm-hmm. And then he dropped out and then all of the air kind of went out of the Stop Trump movement because nobody liked Ted Cruz mm-hmm. and everybody looked at John Kasich and they were like, oh, he's just so nice, but we don't know if we want to be the nominee. But mm-hmm. you've got, I mean, we started this process out with 16 people and Donald mm-hmm. Trump has just nicked them all off and we're talking sitting governors with experience mm-hmm. and he's mm-hmm. just kind of taken them all out one by one. So I'm very interested to see what you guys have to say about, and you guys out there, so you can use the hashtag BHLPC and join that conversation too, about where you guys see the convention going, because I think that they're really trying really hard not to say that they're going to go for an open convention.
Let's play hypothetical. If there is a contested convention, to even ask this question, I think is super open ended. But who do you think has a good chance?
That's a good
right.
Anybody can see it's hard to see an open conventions. Anything can happen.
I was gonna say that. Yeah,
like they could throw in some anybody.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
they could pull in Newt Gingrich and say we want the old Speaker back.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a clear conservative, you've got somebody who they trusted at some point to lead the Republican Party. He could just come in and say, well, we want this. Paul Ryan's like, I'll run the House, you run the executive, we'll figure it out, and mm-hmm. we'll go there. But we'll see. I don't know.
Don't you just love the political process?
Yeah. I do. I love it.
Don't so you
it
just love the political process in America?
It makes it exciting. Because
of the people.
We literally just don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. So mm-hmm. that's what makes it exciting. So if we do end up having an open convention, mm-hmm. I probably will be sitting there biting my nails because then what? Like,
yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens on the Republican side if they do go to an open convention or not. Looks like the Republican Party might be forced to have Donald Trump as their presumptive nominee. But on the Democratic side,
it might be a double open, double contested convention, right? This is what Bernie's been saying the last couple of days.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Well,
however you feel about that,
Indiana has gone to Bernie Sanders tonight.
And he just won Indiana.
He's leading by at least about less than just under 30,000 votes. Right now, him and Secretary Clinton will split the delegates. She had already gone into the state of Indiana with 7 superdelegates. So he's at 39, she's got 29, so she'll just come in right under his 39 delegates tonight. Do you think? See, I always said that this, the word, my least favorite word of the year is going to be the word momentum. Do you think that? Indiana will give Bernie Sanders some sort of momentum, or do you think that the fact that Ted Cruz has dropped out tonight will just, there will be no coverage on Bernie Sanders at this point? What do you guys see for Bernie Sanders after Indiana?
I don't count him out.
Yeah.
Like, after the primary today in Indiana, I don't, like, he might not have gained momentum where he's just, like, blazing, but I don't think that it's time yet to count him out. Although he mm-hmm. did, you know, fire a lot of his campaign staffers,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I still that still wasn't enough for me to count him out because at this point of the race, being that we've already gone through about, 40 states,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty normal.
But what are you not counting him out of? If we look at the delegate math,
mm-hmm.
you know, Hillary Clinton's already going in with 1,645 delegates out of 2,300 delegates. She really only needs 218 more delegates with the superdelegates at this point. Ted, you know, Bernie Sanders would have to win almost, you know, 60 to 80% of the vote in the remaining states. And as we can see right now, he's only pulling 50% of an open primary in states like Indiana, where Clinton was probably going to lose in the first place. I think she did pretty well tonight. But, you know, we come out here to California where there's a bunch of, you know, you've got a clear, diverse group of people. It's a semi-open primary. But I don't think that the delegate math is going to be in Bernie Sanders' favor. It just isn't. Yeah. I mean, it's not even like it could be in Bernie Sanders' favor. It's like not in Bernie Sanders' favor from a delegate math standpoint.
Right. Mm-hmm. So although you have that math counting him out as far as not going down without a fight, he may not, like, the math can totally go for Clinton. Like, he might have absolutely no chance.
Right.
However, we said from the very beginning that he's not going to go down without a fight. Yeah. So that's what I mean when I say count him out. Like, wherever he is at this point, he's still going to be swinging those arms. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think that's what's admirable about him as a potential candidate.
Julie? I have a question. So this is coming from, I mean, I like this this whole election season because I mean, I don't support any of the candidates, frankly, but so I get to examine them all very, very closely and be unbiased about it. But going down without a fight, he's still going down. So right. Mathematically speaking, it's pretty much...
He's not
going to
be...
I mean, it's going to be Trump versus Hillary, right? Right. That's safe to say.
To the point where the news organizations and the media, they're just talking Clinton, yeah. Trump.
Right.
When they talk about the general election, they're not even including Bernie Sanders.
And she's even pivoted in her rhetoric towards the general. She's
Clinton, you know, pivoted a long time ago, yeah. like February. I mean, she was like, can we finish, like, today? No, I don't know, Super Tuesday?
Well, she has the support. I mean, she definitely has the support of the establishment. She has the, I hate saying that word, establishment. That's another
that's
word.
That's my we other
momentum and establishment year. Are two words that we can, like, retire. But she definitely has the support, the delegate support. She, I believe, has the general
popular
vote as well. So, yeah. You know, I do think he's a fighter. I don't know that he's going to win this fight.
He's definitely going to go out, like you said, swinging. Yeah. It would be impossible for all this coverage he has to cover to make up for that and all the ground he has to cover,
exactly.
You know. And so I think that there's nothing wrong with bowing out graciously and say, you know what, Hillary, this
but,
is yours.
You know, it looked like right after last week's primary that Bernie Sanders was just going to pivot to issues. He wasn't going to pivot to winning. He was going to kind of pivot out of this, I'm going to beat Secretary mm-hmm. Clinton, I'm going to do this. And then on his one-year anniversary on Monday, it seemed like, well, we're just going to fight at the convention. And you're like, so which Bernie are we getting today?
Yeah.
I don't know what Bernie, what team we're getting. Are we getting the Jeff Weaver side or are we getting the Tad Devine side? Because mm-hmm. Jeff Weaver's saying we're going to fight, Tad Devine's saying we're going to reevaluate what we're doing, and Bernie's out there just kind of playing, you know,
throwing it against the wall, hoping salt will stick.
Yeah. Listen, he's trying to hang in there. Like, he's trying to do
right.
everything
but
he
do
can.
You, but it's, do you think that all of this will eventually, you know, I hate to say it, but, like, do you think that it will hurt the party? Like, not necessarily Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. because Hillary Clinton will be fine going up against Donald Trump. But do you think that at the end of this whole thing, if he doesn't get out at a certain point, that he will not only hurt the party, but he will hurt himself once he gets back to the Senate?
I think he would honestly hurt more of himself than anything.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't see it really hurting the party, you know, that much. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, you're like, look, right. they done already said, look, it's Hillary. So, I mean,
yeah.
just be honest here. But I think that he would definitely be hurting himself. But, you know, nothing beats a try. You know, nothing beats a fail but a try. So, I think him keep trying and trying until, like you said, just go ahead and bow out. Let it go.
Right.
I all of what you just said, I agree with. I think, you know, at some point you have to, you know, look at the big picture. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know that there's definitely some contention within the party between Bernie supporters and Hillary supporters. But, you know, at some point you got to have to, it's either or. You know?
Right.
So at what point that happens, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking it might be pretty soon. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know that it'll go all the way to the end.
I don't know. I think it will hit the floor. And then it will just be a mad dash to say, you know, I think Senator Sanders, you might have to be the one to nominate Secretary Clinton on the floor. That's just from the state of Vermont. But what another thing that we've kind of seen this entire election is the at least the front run, at least the last few, you know, John Kasich, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, the only person that has had any sort of foreign policy experience has been Hillary Clinton. And then last week, we watched Donald Trump give this very long speech. This I say a speech. I wouldn't even call it a foreign policy speech because I don't know exactly what it was.
Right.
But it was supposed to be a foreign policy speech at the National Interest. Did you guys get a chance to like look at it, like watch it?
Because
it was very pretty. He was standing right in front of some American flags. He looked very...
Very nationalistic, very patriotic. Right. I didn't get to see the whole thing, but I did see enough. is it more of the same?
I mean, I watched it and I tuned out right about the part when he said that he was trying to turn chaos into peace. And I was like, oh. That's what we're doing.
I'm going to admit this. I actually took the speech out, like, I took it, and then I put it into Microsoft Word because I wanted to see at what grade level it was at. And it actually turned out to be at the 9th grade reading level.
Wow, okay.
So I'm like, great. So all the freshmen out there, if you plan on doing it, you can follow in Trump's footsteps and you can do it right now, apparently. Like it was just perfect. There was just nothing of substance in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys remember, but like earlier this year when people started asking him where his, you know, who he was talking to, who was on his foreign policy team, he was like, well, I only talked to myself. Well, I mean, and then, you know, in we'll talk about it later, but, you know, President Obama made the joke of, oh, well, of course he's talked to, you know, Miss Philippines, Miss, you know, making the joke about, you know, these international, that's about the extent of his foreign policy experience. And, but the role of the commander, the first role of the commander in chief is, you know, to protect the American people. Mm-hmm. How important is that going to be going into, I mean, Secretary Clinton would blow him out of the water when it comes to that mm-hmm. matchup. I mean, that's just not a contest mm-hmm. at that point, unless you're talking about bombing people, unless you're talking about non-diplomatic routes of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Which the Secretary has supported.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's also weird because he went in saying, you know, when he was giving his foreign policy speech, he was saying that, you know, he's going to put America first and he's going to think about America. And he was rambling on about that. And then he kept trying to feed us that it was just about peace and that he wasn't going to do war. But then when he went down into the actions that he's actually going to take if he become president, he started going into, oh, we're going to need to have war. And I was just like, but you, like 30 seconds ago, you literally just said something different.
A lot mm-hmm. of contradictory moments in his speech.
Yeah. Right.
And I really want to know who writes his speeches. Like, does he have a team?
He writes it himself.
I'm just assuming because if he's only talking to him, who else is going to write it?
If it's at a ninth grade level.
Right.
In that grade level.
In big font. on his piece of paper. Sorry, what were you saying?
I know. I was just gonna add on. I mean, just to be fair, and I'm by no means a Donald Trump supporter, but I think, you know, some of the more inarticulate points that he was making about what he plans on doing in the Middle East is not that incongruent with what we're hearing on the left, which is, mm-hmm. I think, a little scary to me. Because as far as I'm concerned about war, I think a non-interventionist approach is the best. But I don't really hear much of a difference between the left and the right on their approaches, really. I think it's been, by and large, falling under the same sort of aggressive agenda that has failed us, frankly, in my opinion, with this current administration and the one before it.
I just think, like you said, his speech was very contradicting, and not only just from the speech, but just how he's ran his whole campaign so far. And, you know, we spoke last week about just the hatred, I guess you could say, that he has towards, you know, immigrants, towards, you know, Muslims. I mean, it's across the board, and it's just amazing that he wants peace. And I want, it's like, do you, or are you just saying that just to get the vote, and then you can kind of go have your own little way about it after right. he, you know, hopefully he's not elected, but if he is... You know, so
part of his speech, he said, my foreign policy will always put the interests of the American people and the American security above all else. That will be the foundation of every decision that I make. America first will be the major and overriding theme of the administration. So in putting America first, back to your point, how do you put America first when you have kind of this interventionist policy? You know, Secretary Clinton, on the other hand, has kind of adopted some of Barack Obama's kind of hey, let's sit back, let's
yeah
his tactics. His don't do stupid stuff policy.
Right.
But I think what you're kind of alluding to is kind of like that drone policy of the president's drone policy,
well, that
which has been very controversial.
Controversial, right. Very.
Well, that, the fact that he hasn't closed Guantanamo Bay, the, I mean, the spy program, and yes, his drone policy, mm-hmm. who, you know, the casualties of which an overwhelming majority, as we all know, are innocent men, women, and children abroad.
Right. Correct.
Is pretty controversial, and I don't really see much of a departure from that, from anyone, really, who's running for president on the Democrat or Republican side. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time to really start looking at a third party.
Do you think that any president right now could close Guantanamo Bay?
Yeah. You can put an executive order in.
And you can't.
Can you not?
You just can't.
Okay.
So
then we're getting promises that aren't.
You can. I think, and I've always said this about President Obama, I think that, you know, he put so much of his political capital in the first couple of years of his presidency on healthcare,
mm-hmm. yeah,
that there were sure. so many opportunities to say, okay, we're going to do healthcare and we're going to do this, but there are so many Democrats in the Senate and so many Democrats in the House that can only say, we can only back you so far.
Mm-hmm.
We can only put all of our political chips into healthcare, and if we're going to do that, we're going to pass that. You know, you know, up until 2010, we could have passed immigration. He could have closed Guantanamo Bay if he really felt strongly about that, but how do you go to places like Kansas and places that have these military bases and say, hey, we're going to close Guantanamo Bay, but we're going to put these terrorists in your state? And mm-hmm. I think that is where a lot of these senators are saying, oh, wait, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But just don't bring them to our state. And we saw that in one of the senators, I think he was from Kansas, where he put a hold on the president's nominee for Army Secretary last week,
mm-hmm.
because the president was going to be putting his plan was to close Guantanamo and put these terrorists in Fort Leavenworth. I think Fort Leavenworth.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of the hard part about closing. First of all, nobody wants to close bases in general, and,
right.
and second of all, nobody wants terrorists in their state. So how do you make that argument to the American people and to these states to
do that?
Well,
I guess you start by not making it the bedrock of your campaign is one way to start. I mean, so that you don't have to answer those questions as to why you're not closing what you said you would close, which...
Do you think that is a, from a civics lesson, that is a failure on the American people's part to understand how
totally.
The government works?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I'm on that page. I think everyone needs to really look into, you know, how the system works.
That's
and
research,
what,
yeah.
yeah
that's what we
really,
talked about last week, yeah.
Exactly. Understands what the ramifications of these positions that
mm-hmm.
all of the candidates are taking.
Correct.
I think it's a failure on the part of the American people. And I think people need to, I mean, there's no excuse. There's websites like isidewith.com. I don't know if you know this. If you go, there's this really detailed website that you go on that asks you all of your positions on all of the issues, and it breaks
mm-hmm.
it down really, really. It takes a long time. It takes about an hour.
I was very tired by the end of that.
Yeah, but it's fascinating because it challenges sort of your preconceived notions or your ideas that you've had politically, your political ideas, and sort of makes you see it from a different perspective, which is one option. But that just goes to my point. I think people really need to start doing their research,
mm-hmm.
And not just allowing people, these politicians, to perpetuate these platitudes that, if you listen to, really make absolutely no sense
yeah.
and have really, really bad consequences if implemented in the
mm-hmm.
way in which they say they're implemented. And that's not just an indictment on Hillary Obama. I mean, we're looking at it
yeah.
on the GOP side as well.
And that's
much
more
aggressively.
Yeah, and that's the same thing, Elena,
yeah.
we talked about last week on the show, was just what Bernie was doing, is that his whole campaign, he was doing a lot of promises and really
yeah.
trying to, you know, get the Americans like, yeah, and they were like, where's your plan at? You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's, you know, it's a good way to say you really be informed and really do your research on everyone, you know
and
what
it's
I mean?
Just, and it's not just everyone. It's the process.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at a Bernie Sanders plan and go, okay, well, how does this work with the 50 state strategy?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the states to break this down? Because the states still have their separate rights apart from the federal
right.
government. So you have to know how the state of, because like I always say, what works for the state of California doesn't work for the state of Alabama.
Correct.
Does not work for
mm-hmm.
the state of New York. Doesn't work for the state of Washington. And so it's just like, this last week, actually it was Friday news dump. The White House likes to do Friday news dumps, where the Obama administration came out and talked about their new gun, their progress update on gun safety policy, and now they're doing this smart gun push. Smart gun technology, I think, which is very interesting to me because it almost reminds me of RoboCop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you've got these guns where you can't shoot them unless it's like fingerprint technology, unless you're the owner of it. Do you guys think that will, obviously the NRA has come out strongly against it, because why not? Because they come out against everything that the president does. But how do you guys feel right now about that kind of technology in the hands of our law enforcement and people?
I mean, it sounds good. It sounds good that I'll be able to have a gun that only I would have the fingerprints or the DNA to shoot. However, with the new technology of this device, like, what is it really going to stop? Like, it might bring down accidental shootings, meaning if I'm a child and I grab your gun, then I won't be able to shoot it. However, we're still going to have mass shootings, suicides, you know.
And there's definitely data to support that's an issue.
Right. Yeah. So that's more so my concern. Like, it sounds good. It's a cool new gadget. But is it really going to stop all of the crimes and the violence that has been happening in America?
I mean, you're talking about 93 mass shootings this year and, like, 17,000 different gun-related incidents. Right. Like, that just this year. And we're only in May.
Right.
Like, we just started May. Who knows what's going to happen between now and December? I think the law enforcement side of it, they're a little bit worried about reaction time. They're a little bit worried about and how that's going to affect them on the actual job. So we'll see kind of where the Obama...
That might be good for a few of the cops out there.
It would be. It absolutely
take
would
a
be.
Pause.
Think about it before you... Yeah.
And the NRA has kind of had this... has kind of come out and said, well, they haven't really included law enforcement. I don't think the Obama administration is dumb enough to not include... and the DOJ is dumb enough to not include law enforcement in testing out... not in the field, but in...
Training. Yeah.
These guns.
How is that being, and pardon my ignorance on this, but how is that being implemented? Has that been a discussion?
They're just coming up with the technology. Mm-hmm. I think the technology's always been there,
right?
But I think they're really taking a look at it and trying to roll it out because, you know, the DOJ pumps a lot of money into these state, into these local police forces.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you take away the army, the combat, the assault weapons and the tanks that you give these cops and these and then put smart technology in there for them and hopefully that'll help them out. But I think we'll see what the Obama administration kind of does over the next. They only have a few months left. It's so sad. I don't know what to do. Like, I got so sad the other night watching the White House correspondence.
I know.
Because it is so, so good. And like I said at the top of the show, we listened to the Cup song. So we came up with a way, or Elena did. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened at Saturday night's White House Correspondents' Dinner.
I mean, it was so bittersweet. Like, that's just all I had. I just had that it was so bittersweet. So what I decided to do for today's segment was just to round up about the top eight best moments. I mean, because how could we really choose eight of them?
Yeah. So, 8 years, eight best moments.
And I guess to top it off, we'll start, the first one in 2009, where the first White House Correspondents' Dinner was just 100 days after he had walked into his presidency. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he got on stage and he was giving his speech, he seemed really well adjusted. He was making jokes. He was comfortable. He joked about his daughters being grounded for wanting to take Air Force One out to Manhattan. Like, he was on a roll. And then I know that he also made light of the situation with the cars and the motors because he was using a lot of the U.S. government money to do situations with that. So he just warmed our hearts on his first one. And then we moved right on to 2010, where he noticed that his approval ratings were dropping. And like, he started referencing back to some of his campaign material in 2008. And I think I chose that as one of our best moments because we got to see a more vulnerable side of him, a more softer side. Like, okay, guys, you elected me. Now my approval ratings are going down. Like, what's up? Where you at? Right. So that was one of my best moments, which brings me to 2011, where he kind of slumped it to Trump. As we know, there was a lot of controversy about his birth certificate. And at that dinner, he went ahead and showed a video. He was like, oh, I have the official video of my birth. And the video actually ended up being... Lion King holding up. I'm the hangman. Like, and that was so hilarious to me. What was even funnier for me was Trump was in the audience for that one, and he didn't find any of it funny. So we pulled up, went ahead and pulled up Obama's birth certificate for you there. And then we went into the re-election in 2012. So that's when we had the Mitt Romney situation, and they were talking about that, and it was a lot of back and forth between the two of them. And then Obama went ahead and, you know, started to make some jokes, and he was taking shots that I was surprised at. Like, let's check this out right here.
I'm not going to attack any of the Republican candidates.
Right.
He and I actually have a lot in common.
Sure.
We both think of our wives as our better halves.
And that's a nice thing to say.
We'll show to a alarmingly insulting extent, the American people agree.
He looks really young right there.
He does. This was 2012.
I know.
4 years ago.
We also both have degrees from Harvard. I have one. He has two. What a snob.
So that was one of my favorite moments from the 2012 White House Correspondents' Dinner. And then moving to 2013, he talked about making a lot of rookie mistakes and commenting on, I guess he was getting in a lot of trouble with Michelle, he joked about. He was commenting on Kamala Harris' looks, and he said, you know, she's the best-looking attorney general in the country. And then he was like, when he got home, that wasn't too favorable, so I felt a little sad about him. So he was making jokes about some of the mistakes that he's made, especially when it came to healthcare and other things like that. And then I think what tied that all together, he was like, you know, some things are out of his control. And then he came out to a rap song. Like, we played the
he started getting real comfortable.
Right. We played the Pitch Perfect song, and I think that for this 2013 Correspondents' Dinner, he came out to Jeezy. Did he come out to Young?
He probably did.
I think he made a
Kanye reference as he walked out.
So then he went to say that, you know, things are beyond his control, and made this reference here.
Well, this whole controversy about Jay-Z going to Cuba. It's unbelievable. I've got 99 problems, and now Jay-Z's one.
Jay-Z might have 100 right now, though.
Yeah. We're not gonna get him to lemonade, but I think the fact that he's always not Becky with the good hair. Okay, let's focus. I think the fact that he was always so humble and so up to date made him very relatable for everyone. Which takes us to 2014 when he admitted to being a little hurt, because then again his ratings were going down and things started heating up because this was the midterms races, and he was like, you know, Sasha needed a speaker for career day at her school, and she decided to call Bill Clinton. I was a little sad about that, and I thought that was really funny, because imagine how hurtful it is. You have your daughter like, no, Dad, you can't come.
You're the president, but you can't come. You're
right. But dads aren't cool. That's the thing. Still, it doesn't matter.
You're not doing that well right now.
He's still wearing mom jeans, and he talks about it all the time. He's never going to be cool to us. He's never going to be cool to them.
True.
I think, no. If that was my dad, like...
If that was your dad, you'd be embarrassed by some of the things that he said.
But
that's what happens. That's what dads and moms do. They embarrass us.
Low-key, I'll be so proud. Like, I would never admit it. But I was like, right. That's my dad.
Yeah. I'm sure they use that card quite often. My dad's the president.
Right. Do you not know who I am? Which brings me to 2015, when Obama really just had this take a chill pill kind of attitude. Like,
that photo is my favorite.
So... basically, we know that he had an angry translator. So everything he said was really, you know, it was nice, it was soft. And then his angry translator came onto the stage and was blowing everything up.
Keegan-Michael Key was, he was just so funny.
Right.
Keegan-Michael Key was very funny that day.
And he even started talking about how his advisors was asking him about whether he had a bucket list or not. And he was just, you know, into this... I'm just over it. I'm just trying to chill. I'm just trying to relax. So then he started telling us about his bucket list, and this is what he had to say.
And I said, well, I have something that rhymes with bucket
list. Here's his bucket list. Like, how could you not just automatically love him?
On immigration? Bucket.
Well, bucket. His whole take a chill pill.
Regulations?
Obama has no chill
at all.
Like, he's so petty.
He's so petty. Like,
that's my favorite word of the year.
Oh, yes.
Petty, sure. Very petty. Petty.
I can't take it. And then I guess brings me down to the very final moment, yes. The farewell moment, which happened this past Saturday at his final White House Correspondents' Dinner. There were a lot of fave moments. He made a lot of great jokes, but I think that the most memorable one for us was just his last two words.
Mm. Yes.
His last two words, and here they are.
That Obama Aww. Out.
That's
Obama
all you can
out. I think one I of dropped my, the mic. Did you guys watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
Yes. I think one of my favorite moments of that night was when he actually talked to the journalists and thanked them. Yeah. All he said was, I want to take this moment and say thank you for the partnership. Maybe we didn't agree, but we had a great partnership through these last 7 years and going into the eighth year. And I thought that was really great for them to see, because I think the journalists actually respect President Obama as a president.
Oh, yeah.
After coming from Bush, and then after you've gone through a scandal-free administration.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There has been nothing crazy. Like, you know, Fast and Furious might have happened, but it was kind of a blip at the beginning of the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. You've got Benghazi, which didn't really hit the Obama White House, right. Like, didn't mm-hmm. hit the executive branch at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they really focused on the State Department. So the media really haven't been entangled in some sort of scandal.
Yeah.
They had between 42, 43, 41, all the last presidents had something crazy happen in their administration. And then the only thing we cannot forget is 2011, coming out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and during that time, giving the order to kill Osama bin Laden. Like, oh, this is happening. He's out there telling jokes, and he's already given
he gave that order, and it went through.
So we will certainly miss President Obama.
Yes.
Once this whole thing is over, whether or not it's going to be a President Clinton, a President Sanders, or
say it.
President Clinton or President Sanders. I refuse to believe it.
Say it, Drexel.
But we want to know your favorite moments from the past years or your favorite moments from Saturday night. So follow us on Twitter at BHL Polyculture. You can follow any of us on Twitter or use the hashtag BHLPC. But as always, we are going to shoot it over to B, who's going to give us our trending topics from last week. It's all you.
There is a lot of stuff that has been going on this past week. Uh-huh. So I want to kick it off by talking about the 24th anniversary of the LA riots, which was just this past weekend.
Right.
You know, as we know, that was the police brutality during 1992 with Rodney King, who four officers were acquitted from beating him to death. And, of course, the coined phrase, why can't we all just get along? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, seriously. The next one goes to, which I was really shocked about, was the former Alabama governor, Don Singleman. Mm-hmm. You know, he was already in prison in 2006 for corruption. And Obama gave him a pardon just this past month to release.
And
you're about to be free, and then he gets back in confinement, okay?
See?
For something so petty. We're just going to use that today. For something so petty.
The word of the day is
he got in trouble for running a business in prison. He sold a shirt for $4,000 on eBay. Was the shirt really worth it?
I wonder how he had eBay in prison.
Exactly.
You had
freedom. I mean, you couldn't wait a month later to sell this shirt that was so important for your freedom.
It goes down in jail.
He just got the pardon. So not even to wait. Like, I'm like, all right, I got this shirt. I'll hold off a week or two. I might even up it. I was going to sell it for $4,000 if I was in jail. Now I'm going to sell it for $8,000. Like, he just wasn't, you know.
He couldn't wait. He couldn't wait.
He's an entrepreneur.
Right.
So now
he's got to make money when he gets out.
That's it. He's back in confinement for that. His son, I know it's so crazy. His son released that he's back in confinement. That's also a services attorney. So he said his dad is back in jail. Hopefully he gets out soon, and hopefully he gets another pardon from Obama.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's it. Obama's out.
You
can't. Yeah, it's over. Speaking of the Obamas, the daughters are growing up so much. I mean, I feel like they're like my nieces or something.
Yeah.
But the oldest daughter, Malia, she picked Harvard University to call home, just like her parents. But she is taking a year off, so she'll be starting fall 2017.
Yeah.
So she decided to be grown and travel the world for a year before she starts college.
There was a long time where we thought she was going to go to Brown. Like, there was a lot of focus on Brown University, and I, you know, she's a legacy to Harvard,
her parents probably spoke to her, set her down. I was like,
people
look,
got crazy.
I'm sure that was a conversation.
On Where, like, Twitter and social media, when they announced that she was kind of going to Harvard, and they, you know, I mean, people got
what is it to be mad about?
Am I crazy? Did I read something about the YouTube comments being disabled, or on Fox News' website, the comments were disabled? There was a disabling of comments under this story. Yeah, because people were, I mean, some of the comments that were able to be screen grabbed are pretty bad.
I completely missed
affirmative action. They were talking, you know, well, she only got because of affirmative action. Yeah. What was her GPA like?
Yeah, the comments were brutal.
You're like, she goes to a Quaker school. They probably all have 4 point something GPA.
Exactly.
It's not like
she's probably valedictorian.
Right.
Like,
exactly. Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, look at the access she has. She has access to, like, the best education that money can, like, well, not, I guess not money, because presidents don't make that much money, but, you know, just by circumstance, you are exposed to things that...
Opportunities.
And opportunities that you, if you were us, a normal person, you know, wouldn't be. You know...
Seize it.
I mean, she kind of grew, like, you know, for the past couple years, she kind of grew that portfolio. She kind of did a lot of, you know, she worked on Girls in New York. She was, like, interning on the set of Girls, and she was out here in California interning on a few sets, so... It would be really interesting to see what her major is.
Yeah,
If she wants to go into something more international or more law focused, or does she want to go into something like TV or?
I think
she'll come here.
An actress.
Maybe she's an actress.
I think regardless of her being a legacy to Harvard, we've watched her kind of be her own person and take
her lead. Both of them,
especially when it comes to their identity. They've always been really they're individuals. They don't walk in their father's shadow or their mother's shadow. So I think that it's exciting that, you know, she's going off to Harvard and. I don't know who you guys follow on Twitter, but I didn't see any of those comments. Like, all the negativity just missed me.
It was all over the media. It was just a media thing. It was they kind of said, oh, well, here's what's happening. It was almost like the old Navy ad. That, you know, it was just, it all happened at the same time.
Right.
You got the interracial old Navy ad, and you've got Malia Obama at the same time. So, basically, the Donald Trump fans came out in full force against... anything racial or biracial or interracial,
yeah, and I think that this goes without saying, but there's a civility that's been lost in this election cycle, which is so disappointing.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
come on, this is regardless of how you may feel about anybody who's in power, like, don't go after the kids. Like,
I'm
not really
innocent, he's just trying to get education.
Yeah,
they
did not have a Jenna Bush or
at all,
they did not have
they had none whatsoever.
The most we saw them was, you know, when they stepped out in their very pretty outfits, and we were all like,
so
oh my
cute. This makes me sad. I was just
so
like, oh
fast.
My gosh. And lastly, a more serious note, the San Francisco PD is under fire again for racist and homophobic text messages that officers were going back and forth about. It's gotten really serious because people have literally gone on hunger strikes, and they're literally outside boycotting outside in front of San Francisco PD until this is basically taken care of. And so a lot of the text messages that were said were they were describing minorities as barbarians and cockroaches. And so that is just, you know, and they actually got paid leave, so they didn't even get fired. So I guess they're just going to be on paid leave to, I guess, investigate to see more into that. And basically,
don't they always
get paid and leave? Like,
it's a branch, it's a segment or a system in which cops can shoot people and get paid time off. So I'm not surprised that they can say all the things, the disparaging things that they've said, and they're to no consequence, you know?
I think that's what the worst part about it is, that as sad as the situation is, it's not surprising
at all.
Like,
at all.
So they need that smart gun technology.
Right. No, maybe.
We'll
I mean,
see.
If it'll work, but in this case, it just further exposed people. Like,
oh, yeah.
The more that media advances and technology advances, the more people that are getting exposed. And it's
because you can't get away with anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Social media has made, I don't know how old you guys are, but I remember when Facebook first started. Like, I started college when Facebook first started. And so social media just grew. And then it grew when in 2009. Really, it was real. I mean, the Obama campaign was the first to use social media as a catalyst for a campaign. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing you really can't get away with anything.
At all.
That's why the Obamas have kind of kept their daughters kind of out of this whole thing. And police really can't get away with anything.
So these are law enforcement. What about the people who aren't in the public eye? Like the civilians, the day-to-day people that you walk into the grocery store whose media and technology aren't under scrutiny.
Right.
It's like... They're under scrutiny.
They're just under scrutiny by the government. I mean,
exactly.
Right. Well, yeah,
but not so much.
Big Brother is watching you.
Right.
You will not get away with anything.
But it's not being put on Front Street, where we as like as a community can voice our opinions about it. So we kind of are walking around with it, not knowing, like, you know, and I'm just automatically like, sometimes friendly. So I'm just like, oh, hey, how you doing? And you calling me a cockroach? Like, wait a minute.
I think that's coming. I think that's coming. I think the sort of the democratization of information online and people being more, waking up to sort of what's happening with, you know, I just posted something on Instagram today about Siri, you know, when you press Siri and it says, hi, I'm listening. And I said, yes, I know Siri. I know you're listening. I think to me, there's potential for like a dispersing of all of everyone's business. And I think that might change. Maybe call me a conspiracy theorist or call me like a doomsday person, but
apolitical Julian over there.
I mean, I'm just saying.
But you know what? She's right. What she said. You never know what other people are saying about you because their stuff. Our stuff isn't under scrutiny except obviously with the government. So there's probably been plenty of people that have said worse things more than this. Obviously.
Well, that's why you don't read the comment sections and like it's news so depressing.
Yeah,
like
especially under politics. Don't look under anything. Politics, religion. Just don't stay away from it.
I just want to piggyback on your news out of San Francisco. Yes. We lost a Navy SEAL today in Iraq, so we definitely want to shout out to his family.
Yes.
Thinking about him from this show, we've lost like three combat officers or military personnel over the past year or so. So we are definitely thinking about Charles's family. But yeah.
So while we have Charles' family. And we have them on our mind. You know, we'll send our prayers and our condolences to their family, definitely. So for today, that's all the time that we have. I'm so grateful that you guys tuned in to watch our show. If you want to catch any of us outside of today, you can follow me at Hey It's Lay.
At Drexel Hurd.
At B. Sorrells.
At Julian Dujeric. That was quick.
That was so quick.
I love it. It was so much
thank
fun.
You so
thank
much
you for having me.
Yes.
Today,
yes. We'll be right back here next week, Tuesday at 6 p.m. live. So until then, we'll see you. If you can also follow us on Twitter at VHL Polyculture. It's a new account.
Nice
just go
save.
Ahead and support
and our makeover is done.
On top of that.
Our makeover is done.
'Executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christie, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.